Hi, Ryan and Jeremy. This is Andy Schumann from Maryland. I just wanted to thank you guys very much for doing these sales tests. They're very helpful, and the amount of information I get in that click of a call is just amazing. Thank you so much. Take care.
I want to welcome everyone to this week's episode of SalesCast. Thank you, Andy, for the kind words. If you want to share your story or you want to ask a question, simply open the app and it's right on the homepage. Today we'll be taking some listener questions, but before we do, we're going to be spending some time talking about the upcoming September 15th deadline and the upcoming October 15th deadline. Well, Jeremy, before we jump into our main topic today, I want to just kind of do a recap on last week. And I want to thank everyone because we had a great response to last week's episode. A lot of follow-up emails, some questions, and things like that. And if you haven't listened to it yet, last week we talked about the anatomy of a CPA. We talked about the three types of CPAs. We talked about what motivates CPAs. We dove into the CPA-client relationship. And the biggest one was, you know, how to get in front of more CPAs. So it was a great episode. One of the biggest questions we've had that have come out of that is, can we do follow-up and can we do more in-depth? And I think we talked about CPAs for over 30 minutes, but I think we have like 10 more hours left in the CPA topic.
Don't worry. We're going to find and make time to talk more about the CPA side of things.
Yeah, so we've got an upcoming episode that we're going to be doing on CPAs. And please, what I would ask is that you submit some questions in for that, because we'll kind of make that a listener question episode. And so the way you do that is you open up the app, and actually now right on the main tab, there is a share story, submit a question. So, you know, we want to do that. So before we go into questions today, you know, Jeremy, it's now August, and the other tax season is upon us.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. I'm just going to kind of dive in here. You know, we know that March and April are historically busy times in taxes and tax products, and I think people are under the misconception that, oh, it's July, it's August, it's summertime, it's just a slow time of year. I think that's pretty much that's pretty false.
Yeah, in fact, I think I'm guilty of saying this. If you're on a webinar in February or March, I will say this is the busiest time of the year, and I think really, you know, that's because it feels like the busiest time of year. But when we look in the CRM, when we look in the accounting software, this time of year that we're entering in, not that we just came out of, but that we're entering in right now, is as busy, if not busier, than those few months. And that wouldn't seem like it. I mean, who's thinking taxes in the summer, Jeremy?
Yeah, well, nobody. That's the point. They're not thinking about their taxes in the summer, and all of a sudden, it's deadline time. It's September 15th or October 15th. And they're scrambling. They've been on the boat all summer and forgot that they have a big tax bill that's coming up. And what a great time to be introducing some tax reduction strategies.
Yeah, I talked about this a little bit in our summer tax season episode, if you want to go back and listen to that. But I think really what we're seeing this year, more than any other year, is that, remember again, right now, as of the time of this recording, it is August 2013. Which means that upwards of, we don't know the stats for this year yet, but for a typical year, upwards of two-thirds of profitable companies file an extension in certain industries. And those numbers change every year, so I look forward to this year's numbers. But, so what we see is that, keep in mind, in all of 2012, you've got companies that maybe hadn't been profitable in two or three different years. They had reduced, or maybe in some cases even eliminated, their prepayments. And now, come in April, they got caught off guard. In March or April, they got caught off guard. And so they did what most companies do when you get caught off guard, and that's not break out your checkbook. That's tell your CPA, file an extension.
I'm going on the boat, so let's file an extension.
Yeah, I'll worry about this in the fall. And depending on the type of entity, we're talking typically either September 15th or October 15th. So I am expecting that we're going to see one of the largest years for extensions because of that. Because, again, you're talking at that point all of 2012, first two quarters of 2013, that people have been either making reduced payments, no payments at all, and maybe they've got some large liability. And I think that's one scenario in which this is the perfect time to kind of swoop in and say, you know, hey, let's talk about tax liability. Do you have some upcoming tax liability? Have you been paying in quarterlies this year? Let's talk about increasing cash flow.
Yeah, and even on top of that, you're still going to run across clients that did file on time, but they're still getting their planning for next year and their 2013, their next year's worth of taxes. So just because maybe they were one of the one-third that did file already, that doesn't mean that there's still not an opportunity to start getting our ducks in a row for next year's taxes. Because guess what? If they filed in March, for example, well, that means they're going to file next March for next year, likely. And now, guess what? Towards the end of this year, it's when they need to have all of their stuff in order because they're going to be filing on time. So either way, when you get to the end of the year, you have a lot of opportunity.
Yeah. Well, let's talk some practical steps here, Jeremy. So, you know, as an advisor, it's August, you know, it's vacation season, kids are going to go back to school. It's very easy to let this season slip by, and we don't want to do that. Last year, I was just looking, and we actually had in September and October, it was our single biggest period for just consolidated cost saves all in a row. So, and then we had a lot of R&Ds that are going to be under deadline. So, you know, Jeremy, how do we snap out of this kind of summer funk to, you know, get out there and move from right now? I may be listening to this, but then, you know, it's still warm out. It's still, yeah. You know.
Well, you just got to roll up your sleeves. I use that analogy all the time. I'd start planting some seeds. If you got people that are out of town, understand this is more of a, I wouldn't use the word lazy, but it's a lighter time of year for these next few weeks. But once Labor Day hits, everybody is kind of full blast. So maybe now is the time to start planting some seeds. Hey, I'm gonna give you a call as soon as Labor Day is over that next week. I think there's some things we need to talk about. This might be a great time to do your appointment setting, yeah. So that once Labor Day does hit, you're not just starting, okay, it's Labor Day or it's after Labor Day, who should I call now? Hopefully your call list and your appointments for the entire month of September are set in August.
Yeah, or even if you're struggling to nail them down and they say, oh, I've got a vacation in 2 weeks, call me after that, you may want to use the, hey, listen, if you're like, you know, a lot of companies, you probably have some September 15th or October 15th deadlines. What I'd recommend is let's do a 20-30 minute call now. And I've got my calendar open right now. We won't take much time, but at least we'll know where we sit. We'll know, you know, and then you can enjoy your vacation, but we can already be kind of to stage two by then. So this is a great time, and you are going to have to push a little harder. But it's a time that it's going to be worth it because I would say, again, there's two different times per year, and we're in one of them right now, where the rapid time frame, and they both have disadvantages. In February, March, it's really hard to get a hold of people, but the good news is once you nail them down, they go quick. And this has almost the same disadvantage that it's hard to get people in the rush, but I think you can do it by just explaining, hey, listen, a lot of CPAs want to have this paperwork filed by September 15th. Do the math on it. We're at the top of August right now. We do an intro call next week. It takes us maybe a little bit of time to get things nailed down and get some paperwork collected. You know, next thing you know, we are scooting right up against that September 15th or October 15th deadline.
Yeah, typical cost seg takes 2 to 4 or 5 weeks. If they need it done, say, by October 15th, then we need to get started by early September, which means we need to start talking to them now. We can't start and finish the same week. There is a process to this. So Ryan's absolutely right. If you can start getting them engaged now and say, you know what, we can get started on the back end while you're still on vacation, while you're still kind of enjoying your summer, we can get started because, you know, we're not taking summer break. We're working throughout the summer. And by the time that you're back and that you need this, we're going to be done.
Yeah. Well, we're going to continue to talk about tax deadlines over and over again for the next few weeks. We're not going to let up. So if you have a question on tax deadline, you know, I want you to open up the app and right on the main page, click share a story, ask a question. And we're going to be talking about this every week for the next 3 weeks. And so we'll keep going on that. Well, Jeremy, let's jump into some listener questions.
Hey, savings team. My name's Dave. Do we have any experience working with municipalities or local government?
Well, Dave, I appreciate the question, and you know, I think when people think municipality, you would normally think nonprofit.
Yep.
You know,
yeah.
And so I guess there's a few different aspects to that. One is, you know, obviously a nonprofit entity wouldn't benefit from specialized tax programs because a tax credit or a tax deduction or even a reduction in property taxes is going to, you know, do them no good. But Jeremy, would there be some instances where a municipality would qualify?
Well, yeah, obviously that's exactly right. But contrary to popular belief, a lot of the buildings for municipalities and others are actually owned by for-profit individuals or entities. And if that's the case, then absolutely they would qualify for COSEG. Ryan, I know we have a couple of examples of ones that we've completed projects on.
Yeah, I can think of specifically charter schools. You know, sometimes you would think that the school itself would be a nonprofit entity, but the group that they're leasing it from is a pro-profit entity. I can think off the top of my head a post offices. Mm-hmm. And you would think, you know, do post offices qualify? Absolutely not. But at least from what we've come across in Michigan, Indiana, some of the states I can think of, I know one group that owns most of the buildings for post offices.
Yeah, and one that's would be off everybody's radar is churches. We never would think we could do a study on a church, but there was a group locally here that actually the buildings were owned by a for-profit entity.
Yeah, and so those would qualify. So I think just kind of shifting that mentality from can we do anything for the municipality, maybe not, but a municipality building, on the other hand, you know, those are going to qualify depending on who owns them.
It all comes back to the ownership. So as you're talking to people, Dave, and it just depends. Find out who owns the building and go from there. And if it's just a complete government entity that's not a taxpayer, then obviously then we're not going to be able to do anything from a tax savings perspective.
Now, Jeremy, there is one program, let's talk about it just briefly, that is transferable, and that's the EPAC credit. So in this case, you have a government entity. Let's talk about, first of all, I guess let's talk about what does someone have to do to qualify for EPAC as far as what type of lighting upgrade are they doing?
Well, yeah, any type of energy efficient items they're putting in, it's actually not just lighting, but lighting is the predominant one that qualifies. But it would be lighting or HVAC or any upgrades to the actual building envelope can qualify for the federal deduction. But unlike some of our programs, as Ryan said, this one is actually transferable. So if the government entity is doing that lighting upgrade, they obviously cannot take the deduction because they're not a taxpayer. There are times and ways where the actual architect firm or the installers or somebody else affiliated with that project can actually take the credit or the benefit on the behalf of that entity, and that's something unique to the EPAC.
So maybe that's a partnership opportunity to go and find out, hey, we've got this commercial developer that's putting up, you know, doing all of these upgrades, or a lighting company that's doing all these upgrades, or an architect. Or again, typically, I think if you find, this is the nice part about the post office example from earlier, that once you find that person that maybe owns the post office building, I think you're probably going to find that they own a few dozen of them.
Yeah, that's at least what we've seen.
All right, great question, Dave. And our next question is from another Dave.
Well, my name is Dave. I'm here in Massachusetts, and I got a question. Since they implemented the introduction call and the following statements located on the booking page, all clients will receive an introduction call no matter the status of service agreements, documents, etc. Leads me to the following questions. One, are we as agents, advisors, consultants still conducting our own presentations? And the second and third part of that is, what process method are the advisors, consultants with the highest closing ratios utilizing?
Well, Dave, great question, and we had to cut that a little bit short just for time's sake. So I want to take a moment to remind everyone that if you have a story to share, you have a question to ask, open up the app and just click that. Keep them pretty short. But, Jeremy, the basis of these two questions are, now that we have an intro call, do the advisors still do their own presentation?
I guess it depends on how you would define a presentation. Me personally, I don't like to necessarily use the word presentation, but I understand where we're coming from here. Absolutely, as far as are you still presenting to clients and prospects, of course. The introduction call is really a value-added call after you've already introduced yourself to the client. So yes, you're going to do your own presentation, and there's actually a lot of tools that we've made available.
You know, one of the references in there was the term since we've introduced the introduction call, and I guess I'd like to kind of talk about that we've been doing a form of the introduction call for at least 7 or 8 years now, And, you know, it's always been kind of the same. We used to call it a closing call, and we found this very threatening to clients or CPAs, or because when you're thinking about a closing call or a closing, you're thinking about closing on a house. And so we really felt, well, really, this is the time that they're introducing us in. Now, to speak to that, we've set up this intro call so that, you know, it can really be done at any level. For example, I'll go one extreme, and that is that, and I've shared this often, that if your person that you're working with knows you from another profession, then maybe the right way to do that is to, you know, hey, Jeremy, we talked about this, I think, just on the last episode, but, you know, if I'm Jeremy's insurance guy, I don't really want to veer too much out of there. I want to maybe get out my smartphone and talk to him. I want to maybe do some show and tell, share an article with him and say, I got a guy I got to introduce you to, and treat that like a like an introduction. That would be one extreme. The other extreme, and we've given you all the tools right within the app, the other extreme would be to go to the opposite end of that and do the full either basic or detailed presentation, share some articles with them, do a full calculation, sign agreements, collect documents, book the appointment. I mean, really, what we set this up for is that you can be all the way on one end, all the way on the other end.
Yeah, and I think that's the purpose of this is it depends on your client or your prospect or your friend. Whoever your audience is going to determine what tools you're going to be using. And we've tried to place multiple tools in your hands, including in the app having a basic presentation and an advanced or detailed presentation right there, so you can quickly identify what type of prospect you're speaking with and how detailed you need to go, and the tools are right there. So absolutely, you're going to still be presenting. The intro call isn't taking away from anything that you're doing, but it is allowing you to point, and I think we should talk about this a little bit, pointing to corporate a little bit,
yeah.
Giving that third-party credibility will really help solidify the relationship.
Yeah, if, you know, on that pointing, I think really explaining what's going to happen on an introduction call. That if you've done a basic calculation and, you know, the calculator in the app spit out that maybe they qualify for $340,000 estimate, you know, stating what's going to take place on that. So, Jeremy, if you were talking to someone and you were teeing up the perfect setup for this is what's going to take place next Tuesday, how would you describe that?
Well, obviously, it all depends on the audience. So, you know, what I like to say is obviously the intro call is your introduction to my corporate office. I'm gathering some information here, but what I want to do is next week I want to introduce you to my team through an introduction call. We're going to do it via a webinar format, so you can actually see them, talk to them, and really just introduce you to the back end of this firm. And allow you to ask any questions you might have, but really allow them to introduce themselves to you. And, you know, we really want you to feel comfortable with the whole company. And I'm the face of the company to you. I'm the relationship person. But I think it's very important that you meet the team behind the scenes.
You know, I think the app is set up, if you look at the tabs from left to right, it's, you know, we set this up to really flow, you know, through the process. The first tab has the presentations on the services. You know, this is an overview of what cost segregation is, an overview of what property tax review is. The second tab, industries, talks about the industry specific. So we've talked about in general what cost seg is. Now let's talk about auto dealers, if that's who you're talking to. The third tab is your opportunity to do a calculation and give them a specific example. The fourth tab is for you to book an appointment. And, you know, really, if you think about the progression, then the fifth tab, by the way, is for you to share a success story. So if you think about this when you're meeting with someone, you really just want to, in the app, go from left to right in as much detail as you feel comfortable doing.
Yeah, and I think Ryan said something really important as far as setting the expectation. I would say, and this is going to kind of go into the other questions about the best practices. We've had some advisors, consultants in the past that put a little bit too much pressure on themselves. And because of that, they said a little bit too much at the beginning,
yeah,
and set a false expectation that really hurt the project from there on out. And so you have to be careful to, you know, play your position here. Don't play the role of the engineer and don't play the role of the project manager. Play the relationship guy or gal. That's who you are. Yep. You're building and fostering that relationship. But try not to answer tax questions. Try not to answer utilization or hypothetical flow-through entity-type questions.
Yeah, that's where you get to point to that intro call and say that's a great, you know, if they're saying something like, well, our company, we just did a medical facility that I can remember that once we got to that point, there were four different entities that equally owned that. And in fact, when we collected the deposit check, we literally had four checks come from them because of the way they were broken down. That's not something you should get into on the first appointment.
No, if that comes up on that first appointment, this answer is going to be the same for almost any question the client asks. That's a great question, Mr. Client, Mr. Prospect. Let's set up an introduction call. I'm going to bring in some of the senior members of our team, and we're going to answer your questions for you.
Yeah, that's another way I like to say it is, you know, that's part of our initial review. And, you know, part of our initial review is determine two top things that I like to reference all the time, and that's how much do you qualify for and how much is it going to cost? These are typically the two things they really want to know. And if you let them know, that's part of what we're going to be covering. You know,
it also takes the pressure off you.
Yeah.
When you walk out there you have no pressure if you know that you are the relationship person and you have resources behind you. And if you can really project that to a client, it takes all of the pressure off. Never feel like you have to answer a detailed question. That's just something you know how to point to. And if you have that behind you and you're confident in that, then the pressure is completely off. From that perspective, you don't have to wonder, what if he asked me a question I can't answer, which I've heard multiple times of, hey, I'm afraid to go out there and talk to people because what if they ask a question I don't know how to answer?
And I think, like you said, the answer to every question is that's part of what we're going to review. You know, now let's take this into the other side of it, and that's best practices. And at the end of the day, it may sound like we're going to speak out of both sides of our mouth because we just got done saying, to some degree, I want you to do what you're comfortable with. If your comfort level ends at, hey, Jeremy, I'm Ryan, your insurance guy, and I've got somebody I want to introduce you to because I think he could really help you, then leave it there. I don't want to push you to go any further. But the specific question here, Jeremy, was best practices. And this is something we've been measuring since probably 07, we've had these Excel sheets and these trackers, and you know that measurement's a big part of our culture, so we do actually know what works and what doesn't. And so, but I don't want to confuse people by them thinking, okay, well, that's the way I have to do it. Yes, it is the way that will get you the best result, but what I really want everyone to do is start with where you're comfortable. And that's the most important thing. I don't want you to try to master perfection before making an introduction, because you can make a lot of money. Jeremy, I remember when you were first getting started, you didn't know anything, and one of the first people you ever introduced me to was you had an in-law,
a relative
that was a CPA.
Yep.
And let's talk about that, because you were no expert. You had sat in on all probably 4 hours worth of training.
Yeah, I had sat in on a little training and actually still wasn't sure I even wanted to proceed.
You can say it.
I didn't know.
You weren't even in yet.
I didn't even know if it was viable, and so I reached out to a relative of mine that was a CPA, is a CPA, and I just said, "Can I talk to you about a couple things? I've learned. I've had a little bit of training on this thing called cost segregation and this thing called the R&D tax credit. Is this viable? Is this legitimate? Is there something to this?" And he was actually said, "Absolutely." And if you get into this, I have a couple of clients for you. And that was basically the day I signed on.
Yeah, because then you had a client. And you did, Jeremy, one of the questions was, since we introduced this introduction call, but I mean, you did your first introduction call in 2007.
Yeah.
And, you know, what did that sound like? You get him on the phone?
Yeah, well, I didn't know anything, so I wasn't really able to say it. I said, he already knew that I didn't know anything, so I said, you know what, can I just put you on the phone with one of our guys, one of our senior consultants that actually knows what they're talking about, other than me, who's just learning about this. Can I set up a phone call? And we set up the phone call directly with him, and then the next phone call was with him and one of his clients. And the rest is history. We've done multiple projects over the years through him, and it's been a great service and value add on both sides.
So that's a great way to get started, and I wouldn't want anyone to hold up until they become an expert. But I keep dancing around this topic of best practices, and really what it comes down to, I can define this with all certainty, And, you know, drum roll, please, if you want to know the best practice, it comes down very simply that if you're turning in a client with signed agreement and documents, I've shared on some of our private national calls, and I won't share the specific stat on this call because it is fairly public, but, you know, it's, let's just say it's more than six times more of a closing ratio if you're bringing it in with documents. And so, Jeremy, let's focus in on that. Best practices are you go out there, you meet with them, you present. Let's talk about it from there.
Sure. Well, the key is if you can get a signed agreement, then that's going to increase the closing ratio, obviously, because you're taking it one further step. And getting the signed agreement is a little bit of a skill in itself. But if you can get the signed agreement and then, of course, the corresponding documentation, which there's a skill to that as well, that's going to increase the closing ratio exponentially.
Yeah, because at that point, and we talked about this on last week's Salescast, if you didn't listen to it, what it really comes down to is something we talked about for about a half hour, so we can't go all back into it. But the bottom line was being able to call that CPA and say, I'm calling because we have a mutual client. And so if you want to, you know, drive your closing ratio up dramatically, you know, the answer is very simple. Walk in, get a signed agreement and documents. And I want to challenge you that if you're not able to get those, I'm not saying you'll be able to get them 100% of the time, but if you're not able to get them, say, more times than not, I would just throw out the challenge that I think you may be doing something wrong. And, Jeremy, you've worked with a lot of advisors, so let's talk about that. If someone called you right now, you've got, you know, the mastermind group, you got the SWAT groups, you got, you know, you work with people in small group environments, so you hear this.
Yeah.
And when you get an advisor that comes and says, hey, I met with five people last week and I didn't get any signed agreements, what is your advice to them?
My first thing I'm going to say is, well, treat me like one of those five and tell me what you said. Because as soon as I hear what you said, I can be able to identify why you didn't get them, because I know you said something wrong. And I'm assuming, before even listening, that what he did was over-talk.
Yeah.
That's what I've seen, is the reason people don't get signed service agreements is because they just over-answer. They think anytime a client asks a question, as we talked about a few minutes ago, that they're under some obligation to answer that question themselves, as opposed to point to somebody else to answer those questions. And that's what I've seen. The people that are good at getting service agreements signed are those that are good at not over-explaining, over-answering, and they're simply pointing, hey, my job is to build this relationship. If you sign the service agreement, that's going to enable us to start reviewing your case. We're going to send it to corporate. We'll do a call, and we'll see if there's a benefit or not. If there's no benefit, there's no obligation.
Yeah, I'd say that's one of the primaries, is don't over-talk. I'll talk about another one, and that's don't overwhelm. You know, I hear this, and, you know, again, we've got people out there that maybe you've got some of your own suite of financial services or things that you're offering. But if you walk into a client and do an initial review and you say, hey, congratulations, I have 10 different things to talk to you about after that review. We've actually done a study on this where we took, it was a small study, to be honest. We took 20 deals that went and 20 deals that didn't. And we found overwhelmingly, and this is surprising, but the less services a client qualifies for, the higher our closing ratio was. Because when you go through and you survey someone, if property tax is the only thing they're good for, it's a very focused meeting. And, you know, you're able to, but, it, you know, maybe if you've got a lot of things, you know, the client qualifies for cost seg, R&D, property tax, maybe some of your own financial services and things like that, then you can see where this is very confusing and there's nowhere to point. So, Jeremy, let's talk about that for a second, that if you get a client, and we've seen this before, literally 8-9 different services or different things they qualify for, how do you avoid killing the deal? You get to that screen and you say, hey, congratulations, client. I just completely overwhelmed you. What do you do there?
Yeah, well, for me, I say, let's handle this in phases. I understand that you're a business owner and that you're trying to run a business, and your business isn't to go after incentives. So let's start slow. I think there are two or three or sometimes only one that I would consider a phase one project, that this is your best bang for your buck. Let's start there. Let's get that project going, and then we can start adding on some of these other projects in the appropriate time frame. But what you don't want to do is say, okay, here's 10 service agreements and 10 deals, and I need 10 different sets of bills and documentation. It's just, it's not very, it's not very effective. And so really go, what's best for the client? And if you always are, as a true consultant, are thinking what's best for them, well, what's best for them is to not have 10 projects on their plate. So pick one or two that are probably the best in their perspective, meaning the most dollar amount in savings. That's really what you want to be able to provide. You don't want to come in and start with a project that's going to save them a dollar when you have one that's going to save them $1 million. You want to start with the one that's in their best interest.
And you also want to look at workload. I have no problem signing someone for cost seg and property tax, because what that looks like is, okay, your filing deadline is in March. Currently, at the time of this recording, it's August. And so what we're going to do is we're going to sign this. We're going to get it into production. You're really not going to hear from us until probably February. You have 10 seconds into this project, and then it's off your radar. I have no problem signing that. Now, what we're really going to focus on, though, is the cost segregation, because it's currently August. I assume, if you're like a lot of my clients, that you filed an extension. Do you know when your filing deadline is? And they say, well, we're going to do it sometime in September or October. Okay. Well, do you know if you've paid in quarterlies this year? Have you done any prepayments last year? Because you realize, so as of right now, we're talking about October 15th, and I guess I don't want to recap too much from our conversation earlier, but just a reminder, October 15th, we're talking about all of last year, all 2012 to now. So we're really talking a full year and a half of tax payments they've made that are really on the table for either refund or adjustment or some. Again, don't want to go into too much detail there. But this is the opportunity where you focus the project in. You say, hey, there's a lot we can do for you as a company, but today I need to deal with this glaring $400,000 that showed up, because I imagine this is the one that can have the most impact on your business.
Yeah. It's good. And again, we don't want to speak to the other side, and we don't want to say don't go after multiple products or projects. I just had a call this morning with Greg in Arkansas, and there was three products, and we are moving forward on all three. It's a plastics company. We're moving forward on COSEG, R&D, and property tax all at the same time. But we have to be very careful on how we manage that project. We set up today was the kickoff for cost segregation. We launched that product. In 2 weeks, we're launching R&D. And because there's a deadline in Arkansas for property tax, we need to get that going now. So I'm not saying never do multiple products. Right. At the same time, you have to find a way to understand where the client is coming from and to be respectful of their time.
So, Jeremy, circling back to the topic of someone's been out with, you know, maybe five clients that week, they got zero signed agreements. We said, don't overtalk. We said, don't overwhelm. It'd be really helpful if your next one started with an O, but we won't force it. Are there any other tips that you'd give to somebody who says, hey, I'm just out there and I'm talking to them and I'm just not getting signed agreements?
I think we covered it. Like I said, what I've seen, it's always too much. It's not the advisor. It's crazy, but the consultant advisor that knows very little has actually much more success than the one that knows a lot more. And it seems that it shouldn't be that way, but it is, because the more you know,
you're absolutely right.
The more you try to explain and the more questions you try to answer. And guess what? I've been there. And I'm still there, and I know it. I hurt myself sometimes, because as soon as I talk to somebody, I want to close them. I want to go all the way to I want to hit a home run on this first initial conversation. I mean, really, I need to get a single and just get this thing moving.
You know, I was just talking about this with Bill, one of our corporate trainers, and we have an advisor. I won't say his name. He's in Florida. And I think when he first came in, he turned in, I think, 6-7 different deals, like right off the bat, of clients. And then he decided to get trained, and he decided to go through level 2 training, really learn some stuff. And I had to go hammer Bill and say, hey, I haven't seen anything from that guy in the last few, you know, probably in the last few months, like what was happening. And he had to reach out to him. And really what we found is that he was just disqualifying clients. And because, you know, he really, and that is part of the danger, that after you've been on enough of these intro calls, if you hear one of the team members disqualify a client, and we had this, I think, 2 Salescast episodes ago, we had a question come in that, hey, I heard the ISO process doesn't qualify, because they were on a call And for that particular company in that particular instance and the way that they were doing ISO, part of their ISO didn't qualify. And what I don't want you to do is take the info that you hear on an intro call and then try to apply it across the board as a way to mass disqualify. So
yeah, the best practices are let everybody play their position.
Absolutely.
And your position is of the relationship, the face. That, you know, you're going to be bringing the right people in at the right time for the right projects, and you're going to manage that and the interaction with that client. The best practice is that you play your base.
Well, that's it for this week. Thank you for joining us. And just as a reminder, new episodes come out every Tuesday. Several ways to listen. You can listen in the app. You can click on the link in the email, or you can subscribe in iTunes podcast. Don't forget to submit your questions and share your stories. Thanks for listening.